Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and this is episode 191. We are very pleased to welcome back to the show one of my favorite people and comic book creators that's from my city, which is also a bonus, Mr. Sean Daly. We had him on previously. He's the creator of Terraquill and the artist on co-creator and artist on Samurai Grandpa, as well as Ogre and Ogres, that is published through Sourcepoint Press. We were supposed to meet in person, but under the circumstances, of course, we ended up doing a Skype call, which is still just as well. We had a wonderful conversation just talking about the current climate of things and a lot of the work, things that he's working on, things that we can expect to come out in the near future. And then we get into a little fun chit chat about some wrestling, because Sean is a big wrestling fan, as well as some recommended matches to watch if you're into wrestling, because it's WrestleMania season. So if you want to go back into the archives, I've been told that WWE.com is showing all of their pay-per-views for free, their previous pay-per-views that's in their catalog. So it'd be a cool time to go and revisit some of those if you were a childhood wrestling fan or still are a wrestling fan, as well as things to read while we are, you know, doing our quote-unquote, not quote-unquote, it is what it is, our social distancing, where we're not really going out to restaurants, mingling, visiting friends on a Friday night or on the weekend. We're staying at home with a lot of our spare time. So with all of that spare time, what are some of the things we can watch? What are some of the things we can read? I think all of these recommendations are helpful for us, and it's always good to have a creative chit chat with very creative people. So without further ado, I hope everybody is staying safe, enjoying this time with their family. And if one of the things that you do is enjoy listening to podcasts, I hope you enjoy episode 191 with my buddy Sean Daly. Take care, everyone. Sean Daly, welcome back to the Cave of Solitude. How have you been?
Good, good. Nice and busy. Just getting as much done as I can. So yeah, it's been good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I know we were chatting just before I pressed the record button, but how are you dealing with our city and everything that's happening with the pandemic? It's kind of crazy times that we're living in.
Yeah, it is. It's something else. I've been dealing with it pretty all right, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate in that I work from home anyways, so I guess lucked out as far as, you know, I still have a lot to do, a lot that's keeping me busy working on the books that I'm doing. At first, I did lose a little bit of motivation. Like, it was just, honestly, it was a little hard just to wake up and spend the whole day drawing with all the stuff that's going on. You know, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
But, you know, over the last couple, last week or so, I'm coming around. My productivity is back to what it was. So I can't complain.
Yeah. Was it information overload or sort of like the paranoia that a lot of people are going through that you are dealing with?
Mm-hmm. I didn't get any of the paranoia, really. It was just the concern for the people around me, you know, like my folks aren't, you know, in their 50s anymore.
Right.
So, you know, concerned for stuff like that, hoping that, you know, everyone who should be is taking it seriously. I mean, we should all be taking it seriously, but, you know, it was concern for other people that just had my mind kind of in a tizzy. So, but over the last week, seeing the precautions that everyone's taking and that, you know, most people who I know are taking this very seriously, so that put my mind at ease a little bit and I was able to get back at it.
Right. So as a person who, I mean, I talk to a lot of artists and, you know, people who are creators, and them working at home is known, it's not an adjustment per se. That's kind of, they're in a studio. And a lot of us who are into the arts or who are creators are introverts a lot of times. So we're okay with being told, like, hey, just chill out at home, enjoy yourself with your loved ones and stay put for a bit. But was there anything that you felt that you do enjoy being able to do that now your life was kind of like, oh man, that thing is kind of gone, and I don't know if I appreciate it enough, or was there anything like that for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, every Friday or every other Friday, I would meet up with some friends, and we would play, like, card games and board games and stuff, so I really, you know, I miss that social aspect, you know, the very small social life that I had took a bit of a hit, so yeah. It's, you know, I miss that quite a bit, but we've figured out ways around it. Like, we've done some workaround things using different, like, online video and streaming apps and online games and stuff that we've been starting to figure out. So thankfully it's still there, but it's just not, you know, it's not what it used to be, which I'm pretty sure everyone can say that right now.
Yeah. You know, it's taken the social media term to another level, where I think finally we're going to be using it in a more beneficial way, other than just, you know, going on our Facebook and posting and Instagram. Not that all of us do that, but now we're using it to actually connect and try to spend time with people who we used to be able to see, and not realize sometimes, like, oh, I don't know if I'll be able to give you a handshake or a hug next week, and you miss those things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's all changed so quickly.
Yeah, very, very fast. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did it affect your work in any way as far as deadlines or things that were going to be released? I know you have, I know you're working on Ogre. Were there any things like that that were, you know, derailed because of this?
Not so much derailed. Maybe put on temporary hold for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I did have some projects that I was kind of in pre-production for that. Now I'm not,
right?
You know, not right now. Anyways, that'll change soon enough. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. But I was working on other stuff with, like, Easton, Samurai Grandpa, writer and co-creator, that I'm still working on right now. Like, I have it in front of me, and it's, you know, it's in progress right now. We're not stopping that.
Cool.
You know, it's we still kind of feel like we have this obligation to put out content now, almost more than ever, more than, you know, we have in the last little bit, just to, you know, to things have slowed down and things have stopped, but we don't want, obviously, I think everyone doesn't want everything to stop, right? Like, no. We still have to make art, and we still have to tell stories. And I think right now that stuff is actually going to really help a lot of people kind of get through this time.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, for me, I don't know about everybody else, but these are the times where I think that we should all be appreciating the creatives and the arts even more, because it gives us a minute to not be on the go, not be stuck in traffic, we are still worried about getting our groceries and things like that, but a lot of times it's like, there's nowhere to be except for home right now. So what are we appreciating? Have we built up an ability to appreciate that? Because some people define their whole life by having a place to go to work, and that's it.
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing. I think a lot of people are going to ask some pretty important questions about how they spend their time when they have so much of it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, why not start either, you know, this is actually a great time to pick up a new hobby or to try something you've always wanted to do. Like, you kind of don't have an excuse at this point in time for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool too, to see how people are expressing themselves creatively, whether they already are in that line of work, or even some businesses figuring out ways to stay afloat the way things have been disrupted. You kind of see the best of humanity, in the sense of, oh, when problems arise, this is how we change the world. And
yeah, you're
kind of seeing
right.
It as we live. I don't think anyone I know, other than maybe my grandparents, who are you know, very elderly now, they, when they were younger, they got to see the World War II, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anyone I know has seen something as globally defining as what we're going through right now. Not even 9/11. I mean, it was huge, but this is, everyone's affected by this in the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. The term unprecedented gets thrown around a lot these days, but mm-hmm. for good reason. Like, it is. There's nothing that's quite been like this in the current, like, I don't know, just everyone who's been alive so far. Like, no one's really seen this.
Yeah.
So it's something else.
Yeah, last time, I guess, something like this was 100 years ago, right? In the Spanish influenza, was it? 1918 or 1920. Yeah. So, I hope it's a long time after this one that this has to happen again. But we'll see. What are you looking forward to most to going back to normal? That obviously getting together with friends, but were there any things, little rituals that you enjoyed doing that you look forward to going back to?
I miss going to the comic shop, you know?
Right.
Like, that was a big one.
Yeah.
That took a bit of a hit there. And I miss taking a little bit of a break during pages and heading downtown to, like, BMV Books or one of the bookstores. Seeing what's new, just taking a couple hours to take in the city. Like, I guess I miss the city is what I would have to say. Because, you can walk around, but you can't get a cup of coffee. You can't get a drink anywhere. You can't check out a bookstore. You can't do anything. And you're not even really supposed to just be walking around for fun anyways. Like, you are supposed to be just kind of hanging in and being responsible. So,
yeah,
I'm glad that, most people in this city are. Like, I think we've been doing a pretty good job, thankfully. But, I'm looking forward to just being able to enjoy where I live again.
Right, yeah.
In the ways that I did.
Yeah, I was very fortunate in the sense that right before my work shut down and all of these, businesses and things were closing up. I was working in the city close enough that I was able to make a pit stop at BMV Books. Nice. And grab a couple of particulars before all of this happened. So I got a little fix in just before.
That's good. You stocked up, eh?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, when you go to BMV, you kind of get a couple new things, but then you kind of find an old gem or something that you had on your... got to get that sort of list, and it's like, okay, let me do this now while I'm here, and I hope I see the store again soon.
But that's it.
I have a comic book shop. My regular shop is right across the street from where I live, literally. And nice. So that's always nice to have, but even that is, I can't go into the shop and just chit-chat with the guys there.
That's right.
So they're doing like a curbside pickup where you can basically do a drive through and pick up some books or anything that they may still have in stock because there's no new stuff coming out, which is right. Kind of a bummer, but
that was nice of them to do the curbside. I mean, they didn't have to do that, but it's really nice that they decided that, we'll make sure that you're getting your stuff, and they're keeping it going. They're keeping it going for a ton of people, and it can't be understated how important the retailers are for the comic book business as a whole.
Yeah.
So it's very heartwarming to see that they haven't forgotten about us. And I know that, like, there are even initiatives going around, like SourcePoint Press, for example, is donating 25% of all of their sales to comic book shops. Just to help them front the costs for things and to help them keep their lights on, basically. So, shout out to everyone who's kind of doing something to help their local comic shops, and shout out to all the comic shops who are still helping people get the books that they've ordered.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Definitely. I mean, they don't fall under the category of essential, but for a lot of people, being able to read a book in physical copy or even just the community that you get from going to your local restaurants, your local bookstores, whatever it might be. It's part of those things that keep us connected, right? There's so many things now that society has set up where we could just sit at our house and never leave for anything. So it's good to have these things where we still go out and, you know, meet up with people and be able to, you know, have a conversation in the flesh nowadays. So what are you currently working on? I know you mentioned Samurai Grandpa, but are you still dividing your time between comic book art and doing the video game soundtracks?
I've still been taking like video game soundtrack and music work and stuff like that. Here and there. It's been mostly comic books just because that's kind of what I want to focus my 2020 on is
cool.
Just putting out new books and trying to figure out new projects and whatnot. So yeah, mostly comics. I'm working with Easton on two projects. One of them is another Samurai Grandpa.
Okay.
Story, another full book. And the other one I can't quite talk about yet, but I will be soon enough because I'll probably be posting artwork from it, pretty shortly.
And it's a project with Easton as well.
Yeah, it's both of us. We're doing another thing together, but this one's going to be a little different than what we have done in the past. It's going to be quite fun. It's still comic stuff, but there's I really want to talk about it, but I can't. Sorry.
That's okay. I mean, we could post this after the announcement is done if you want. It's completely up to you. But if you want to keep it under wraps, let's keep it under wraps. It's all good.
Yeah. I better, just in case.
Okay.
I don't want to have to, I mean, I would have to clear it with him. So, sure. And, you know, soon enough. I'm really looking forward to being able to share it. We both are.
Yeah. Okay. But it's a creator-owned project.
Yep. Okay. Yep, this is a creator-owned thing. Yeah. And then along with that, I just finished drawing a book called Better Place, which is... there's also some exciting news for that, but I am not allowed to talk about. There's a lot of things I'm not allowed to say about what I'm doing right now. Sure enough.
Okay.
But that one, I do believe we'll be making an announcement about that probably within the next week or two.
Okay.
But that, all I can say is that it was picked up somewhere by someone.
Okay.
And that it'll be published by somebody or a publisher I've always wanted to work with. So
very cool.
Yeah,
that's great.
Super.
How are you feeling with all of this? I mean, last time we spoke, I didn't realize that you just picked up one day an art set that was gifted to you and became a comic book artist that, you know, in your late 20s, which is unprecedented. And now you're seeing, you know, the fruits of your labor. Really come all around full circle. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. It's you know, it's a lot of work, and it's exactly what I expected, to be honest. I mean, coming from the music industry where you're working like between 12 and 18 hour days, sometimes it's like, you know, I kind of had an inkling of what I was getting into, which made it a little less daunting, I suppose. But now, you know, these years later, just kind of seeing how everything is unfolding and the things that are happening, it's great. I still never really feel like satiated. Like, I always feel like I have something more to do, and I can never really just stop or really take the time to enjoy the news that I get when I get good news. It's like, I don't really want, I just want to move on to the next thing. So I actually try not to think too much about it and just, you know, project to project, just do as much as I can as quickly as I can.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Kobe Bryant was quoted as saying that it's not the making the shot in the big game, it's all of the practice shots that you're taking and the prep work behind the scenes that is living the dream. Like that,
yeah,
there is.
That's the, brilliant. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
So when you do take a moment to pause and look back, you'll actually be remembering all of the erasing and, you know, the mistakes that you made to make what you made be something. So it makes sense what you're saying now, where, you know, that, you don't have the time necessarily to process all this great news or new things that are coming. You're just still in the gym taking those practice jump shots.
That's right. Yeah. I don't know if it's a career. I felt this way in music as well, where I almost had like imposter syndrome where it's like, I don't know why I'm, or like how I'm like getting by doing what I'm doing. Like it's, there's always a better choice for, you know, like it just, I never feel like I should be, like I deserve to be where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And I think I like to think that a lot of people in creative businesses feel that way.
I think so.
That like thinking that I'm not alone there helps me actually kind of deal with it, which is nice.
Oh yeah. You're definitely not alone. I mean, even for me in working in a trade, like in the construction field, sometimes I wonder like, am I really this, you know, job?
Right.
How did I ever pass that you know, certificate of qualification to be licensed? Like what? And then even podcasting sometimes, like I always feel like, do people think I'm just, you know, and I am. I'm just another guy with a recording set to be able to have a website and have a podcast. But then there are those moments where you do talk to creative people and you're like, man, I'm actually doing this thing. But you still feel like a fraud in some capacity. So it makes total sense, but I think that's part of the process.
I guess so. Evidently it is. It's, I am glad I'm not alone there though. It's,
I don't think I've heard one person, like someone that I've befriended who hasn't expressed that in regards to what it is that they're creating. I've heard that.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's just part of it.
That's just part of the process. Yeah. Well, you know, it's something that we kind of, I guess, just have to deal with and just, you know, I hope it goes away one day is all I can say about that. I hope that the feeling of, you know, inadequacy just kind of vanishes. I don't think it will, but
maybe it shouldn't. Maybe that feeling shouldn't. Yeah. Maybe that's what makes you keep thinking that you got to get better. If that feeling does go away, maybe you get that chip on your shoulder of not appreciating being at that con or being invited or asked to be the artist for a book.
Absolutely, yes, and I never really want that particular desire to go away. You know, that's important. It's very important.
Yeah, you don't want to forget. You know, I occupy this space now. I am that rarefied air. Then,
right
now we lose Sean Daly. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'll do my best to stop that from happening.
So tell me a little bit about your working relationship with SourcePoint Press, because I know Terraquill is published through them now, which I still have not been able to get a copy, which I intended to at this Comic-Con that got canceled.
Yeah.
And Ogre is coming out through them as well, right?
Yeah, so Ogre is out. Ogre's.
Ogre
is the sequel, which we actually finished, and we released the whole thing in single issues, and the trade would have been out, but you know, stuff happened, so the trade will be out eventually, just we don't know quite when yet is all.
So is it something that's a finished product that just wasn't able to be released because of the current situation?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's all done, it's all ready to go. Okay.
Can it be ordered from SourcePoint Press or anything like that?
The single issues can be, but the trade can't be.
Right, because it has to go to the stores first.
It didn't even end up going to print.
Okay.
Just with the timing of everything, you know.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I do pretty much can be ordered from SourcePoint. They've been just so awesome. And like their initiative to help the creators who've been affected by everything. Mm-hmm. They recently were doing some live auctions on their Facebook site. Some of the coolest stuff, like old hard to find issues signed by the creators. Easton and I put up a little project of our own, for them, where we would, whoever won the auction, we would draw them into a one-page comic in the Samurai Grandpa universe. Okay. We'd represent them however they want to be. If they wanted to be like a mythical creature or a character in the canon, then we would do that. So that ended up selling at the auction. So we're kind of actually developing that right now too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what made you, how did this partnership start with them? What made them the ones to, you know, have your books published through?
I mean, I love what they're doing in that they're like the quintessential indie publisher. It's people working around the clock who, you know, started a company in a basement pretty much and have since moved on to bigger and better things in the time that they've been in existence. But they actually reminded me a lot of like the punk rock culture that I grew up in, in that it was just like a small group of people just saying, we're going to do it our way and we're going to, you know, we're going to rock it. And they did. They did everything that they wanted to do the way that they wanted to do it. And that mentality came through in the books that they were publishing and in the people that they were working with. And I was immediately drawn to that mindset. It's hard to find harder working people right now than the people who are working for Source Point Press.
That's good. It's nice when you have a relationship that you feel confident and very comfortable in, and you feel that you're supported by them, because that's not always the case.
That's not always the case at all.
Right.
Many times it isn't the case. And I always want to align myself, as should pretty much anybody, with people who are going to work as hard as you, or, you know, people who can kind of challenge you to work even harder than you have been working. And I found that with these guys and girls. They're just like highly recommended to anybody. Once conventions start back up, if you're at conventions and you make comics and you're looking to talk to a publisher about some of the stuff that you're doing, approach them and talk to them, because they're always kind of looking for new hardworking people to work with and new books to look at.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. Do you think that we're going to be able to see a convention this summer? What are your bets on it?
I wouldn't even know where to begin, to be perfectly honest. I don't think so. If we do, I'm going to keep my expectations low, and I'll say that no, we probably won't. That way, if we do, it's going to be an awesome surprise.
Right. Yeah, I was skeptical about the Toronto one, and a week before it was canceled, literally a week before it was canceled, I was talking to Kevin Boyd about it, and he was like, "No, all systems are go. We've got these things in place and how we're going to make it work." And I was excited, because it may have been, I was thinking to myself, this might be the last time we get to see each other or do something like this. And they made the right call to not gather. Yeah. It was totally the right call, because you see some things that are taking place that were still taking place in the States maybe a week or two before things got really bad. You had gatherings of 1 million people.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's just like, ugh, you know, I'm kind of glad we didn't go forward with a lot of the things that we were hoping would happen, just for our own selfish reasons, because it was definitely the right choice. I'm hoping that we see something this summer. I'm hoping, but it's okay if we don't. It's better.
That's the thing. It's like, it's okay if we don't.
Yeah.
I hope we do too, because there's people who I want, you know, I love going to these shows. Everybody, especially here in like Toronto, it's just like super chill, and the community, if the people weren't who they are, I don't know that I'd care about going to these shows. I still would, because I, you know, want to share everything that I'm doing and hopefully, you know, make a little bit of coin at the same time. But it really, really, really is just the people who make these shows so much fun. and like, you know, completely worth the cost of admission.
Right. Yeah. What has your experience has been with Toronto as a comic book community? Because I think one of the top cities, in my opinion. I haven't traveled to all the other great. I mean, I've been to New York City and gone to Mocha Fest, which is their TCAF. And I felt a very similar vibe, but there's something about our city and the culture of comic books that's special. What has your experience been like, having been a fan to an indie creator to now having your profile grow and grow more and more?
Oh, I love it. Toronto's definitely one of the best cities for just comic fans and creators and just consumption, but. Philly was really good too. Philadelphia had an awesome, huge, strong community of fans and creators. Michigan as well, and Denmark is also pretty notable. Denmark, a lot of people. Really? I did Denmark's version of TCAF as well. Like, they're just kind of like a small international, not small, but their international library convention, which is one of the best shows my entire life. Like, if anybody happens to be in Denmark for that show, I highly recommend it.
Wow, that's really interesting. Tell me more about it.
How did that come together? Everybody who was there just wanted comics. It was just like TCAF. It was they showed up just to get comics and original art, and European comic art has this different vibe than a lot of the stuff here in the West. It's kind of, there's a lot more people using traditional media over there. A lot of paint, a lot of ink. And it seems like that's what a lot of people wanted when they were there. They wanted like a tangible piece of comic art that they could put up. Everyone kind of expected to be walking out with an original piece. So, and I mean, that's awesome. That's what you want when you're a cartoonist or a comic book artist and you draw on papers. Those pages do nothing sitting in a box in your studio, right? It's like you want those to get out to people, and that was just such a good place to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, over in North America, I guess there's a lot of that. People love their original art, but a lot of times it's a panel page from a big two, or even like if it's an indie book, a well-established person where they maybe feel that their art will be worth something. Like it's a quicker investment. But to hear that over there, they want that very individual. Doesn't matter who you may be in the big scheme of things, they're judging it based on the merits of what they see, right?
That's the thing, and how they feel when they look at it. That was one of the. I'd never had been to a show where so many people stopped, looked at a piece of art that I had on display, talked about it amongst themselves, and how they felt about it, which was really cool. They weren't just kind of flipping absentmindedly through a portfolio. They would stop, they would stare, they would comment. And then they would move on. So it was really neat. It was actually a great place to get feedback on some of the stuff I was doing.
So what kind of feedback did you get? Like, what was the difference in regards to, like you're saying, they took the time, they looked at it, they discussed it with each other. What was the feedback that you found yourself getting that was helpful?
A lot of the stuff that I was getting was just about like watercolor technique, and I received so many questions about how I'm doing this and how I'm doing that. And even there were some traditional artists who don't do comics who stopped by to look, and they would just give me some pointers about some of the techniques I was using that were just, it was awesome. It was so neat. It was one of the coolest like comic experiences I've had, and I was just super pumped to be invited to that show. And everybody there was super friendly, very kind, and very literal as well. I had a great time with. Like, if you asked somebody how they are, like, how is it going, they would tell you exactly how they are. Like, it was a little tired this morning and it was raining out, so I wasn't happy with that. like they would literally tell you, here's how I am. So it was really, really enjoyable. Great experience.
Yeah. We're too busy over here to actually care what you like. We just saying it to be friendly, that we don't really want to know. That's so funny.
That's how it feels sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, I would never have guessed Denmark, but you know, you learn something new every day. Was there a struggle with like the language or?
Nah, everyone spoke English.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Everyone was, very, it's just like, it was a lot like Canada, actually. Just everyone was super friendly, super kind. Great place.
And where was the other place that you said you went to? You went to Philly?
Philly, Michigan as well.
Okay.
Great, super fun, super nice communities as well there. Everyone just, they just want comics, you know?
Yeah. That's great. And even in Denmark, with all of that, all of those people appreciating your work and people coming to ask you technique, you still felt like, you still have that imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Of course. It's just one of those things, I guess.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Ogre. What if people are interested in picking up that book, those books, or the trade when it is released, give us a elevator pitch for it, or a more in-depth pitch, not an elevator pitch.
Right. Well, the first book was Ogre, which that's available now in trade.
Okay.
And that was like a really fun... it was a fantasy story. It was written by Bob Sally, who's the co-creator. And he's very, very strong at science fiction and kind of like epic stories. And he wanted to try something that was more rooted in fantasy. And he knew that I was a big fan of most fantasy stories and fantasy storytelling. So he asked if I would jump into this with him. And so it's the story about an ogre who's chained to a corpse. And the ghost of the corpse is haunting the ogre. And they just kind of go on this misadventure. But it ended up becoming this very fascinating character study. I don't want to say too much more about that. But it really is just about this ogre and who this ogre... Because a lot of people... they think of ogres as just like mindless grunts or beasts that are there to wield clubs and attack the heroes. But we kind of did something a little different this time around and had fun with what I think is a pretty neat character arc and some interesting character traits. So that book ended up doing pretty well. And we started work on a second one immediately after, pretty much. And that we called Ogres. And this focuses on not the same ogre from the first volume, but three new ones who we had some fun with. Some of them at, you know, the expense of themselves. But it was a good book, I think. I had a ton of fun with it. And we're actually, it was successful enough to get us one more. So we're actually working on the third volume right now, which is going to wrap up the entire arc. But the second one, Ogres, I don't want to say too much about it. That's what I would say about it.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. If anyone just really happens to like fantasy comics and fantasy storytelling, mm-hmm. They'll probably like this book.
Okay. And was, I know you didn't write it, but where did some of the inspiration for what you put on the page come from? Were there any sort of stories or other books that maybe you said, you don't want anything to look like someone else's work, but maybe a feeling that maybe something else resonated with you at one time? Was there anything like that?
So each book that I draw tends to have influences from a different creator's work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what it would have been while I was working on Ogre or Ogres. It's a hard thing, man, because it changes from book to book and it's getting hard to keep track of.
Yeah.
But, I think if it was anything, it was probably, and I say this to everyone I talk to, but it was probably more Akira Toriyama stuff, like the creator of Dragon Ball.
Okay.
Yeah, because he, his comic stuff is just, I think he might be one of the best of all time. Not I think, I know that to me he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had just recently acquired one of his art books, which is just like a retrospective of his career on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably studying that while I was working on Ogres, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Cool. That's a good reference point, I guess, for all of us to get a gauge. What is it about his work that makes you revere him as much as you do?
The simplicity, the very angular line work. Mm-hmm. And you can see how much he's changed over the last 30 years, you know, working on stuff just by this book, really. It's just like flipping through it. You see how his style has changed, even though it's very recognizable from when he started to, you know, modern day. Like, it hasn't changed enough that you would have no idea who it is, but it's just become way more refined, and I find that incredibly encouraging to just, you know, I would love to one day look back at everything I've done over a long career and be able to pick that stuff out as well. But that will never happen because I don't like looking back at my stuff.
Well, it's you know? Not meant for you. It's meant for the fans of you, right?
Exactly.
But to say that you have that book that people can look at is what the goal really is, right?
That's true, yes.
It's cool to be able to, as much as it makes the person uncomfortable, like whether it's music or something you've drawn or written, to kind of cringe is like, oh my goodness, like how did this ever get by? But then you see the progression and you had to want at one time be cringeworthy in your own opinion to right. get to that point where you can stomach yourself.
That's true. That's right? True.
So, part of the growth. So just for a quick checklist, we can pick up Terraquill, we could pick up Ogre the Trade, Samurai Grandpa, all at Source Point Press.
Yep, all okay. at Source Point.
And they can all be ordered at your local comic book shop as well.
Yeah, that's right.
And what can we stay on the lookout for of what's coming up next?
Better Place is okay. coming up.
That's with you and Easton.
That Better Place is with me and a writer named Dwayne Murray.
Sorry.
Who's the co-creator of that. It's that's going to be fun. That's going to be a really neat story that we're putting together. But that'll be tentatively later this year, if not early 2021, depending on a couple things. But more information on that soon.
Okay.
And then there's more Terraquill in the works as well, more Samurai Grandpa, a new untitled project that Easton and I are putting together.
That's right.
And, yeah, there's even some other stuff as well, but I'll have to keep that on the down low for now.
Okay. Well, that just makes having you return more pressing.
Right.
So let's round off our chat with some fun stuff. I asked you before we were recording to let's come up with some top five lists during our extra downtime that we have, that everybody has. You are one of the bigger wrestling fans that I know, and I know you love to talk squared circle. Are you enjoying AEW?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, Chris Jericho's your guy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's, I think, the best. So, yeah, of course, I've been really, really enjoying it. It's it reminded me why I fell in love with it in the first place, you know, back in the day.
How do you feel it serves as far as there being a competitor? Not that it's directly competing or can compete with WWE, but to have a second show to watch.
How's that for you? Super important. Yeah. It's we've needed this for a long time.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm so glad that we finally have something like this that we can you know, we can get something different.
Right. I think that was missing. For me, that kind of took me out of wrestling a bit, was that I was such a – I would watch both Monday night shows and was always excited about who was jumping ship or what was happening. And yeah, once there was a lack of competition, it wasn't so – one was always going to be better than the other. I never felt that WWE was ever going to lose out, even though they came close. But
yeah.
It was good to have another place to get something. And to have everything kind of monopolized, it just sort of – I don't know. For me, it lost a little bit of that luster over time.
But yeah, big time. It lost a lot of it, I would argue.
Yeah, like it did.
You know, it's just you don't have to care anymore.
Right.
When you have no competition. You can do whatever the hell you want.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that – AEW, I think it is a legitimate competition to WWE, and I would love to see them move Dynamite to Monday nights sometime and see what happens. I think it would shake things up in such a big way, bigger than AEW even showing up in the first place. I think it would shake things up.
Yeah, we all like the underdog story, right? So I think a lot of people would just support the underdog just because. And then if they have a good product, it just adds more fuel to the fire.
Exactly. That just makes it all that better, big time.
Right. So it's I don't know what they're going to do this year. I know that they're still showing programming.
Yeah.
Empty audience. No audience.
Yeah.
But it's WrestleMania season. Are you going to order it? Are you going to still watch it?
Honestly, probably not. It's just not
cut
for me. I don't feel like, I wish it would have just been postponed. I wish that they would have just said, you know what? We'll still do it. We'll do it later. Now is not the time. But you know, they didn't, and that's cool. Hey, it's the show must go on mentality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all the power to them for making that decision, but it just kind of totally killed any interest that I had in it. So, I'll get the highlights, I think.
Yeah. That's probably all you'll need this time around, unfortunately.
At this point. Yeah. But, to anyone who is actually watching it, I hope it's an awesome show. I hope you get some fun, and you know, and to all the performers as well. Like, I hope it's a great show for everyone who's involved too. It's just because I don't think it should go on doesn't mean obviously that it's, you know.
Right. So give me the Sean Daly top five WrestleMania matches that you've got.
Let's see.
And how far do you go back?
So in no particular order.
Okay.
This one's actually kind of a two-parter. This is going to be, it will be in a particular order. This will be 5 and 4.
Okay.
5 would be Daniel Bryan, Triple H from WrestleMania 30, which was, I don't know if you remember the story that they were telling with Bryan.
No.
Kind of coming out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Not coming out of nowhere. He was in the company for a while, but the fans really started to get behind him. And then that kind of gave birth to the Yes Movement, which, you know, like the fans would interrupt live segments just to let the people, the performers know how much they cared about Daniel Bryan. And it turned into this whole long 6-month story where he kept getting screwed over. And like people started legitimately hating some of the people who were telling the, like the bookers and Vince McMahon and stuff like that. And anyways, they gave Bryan his moment at WrestleMania 30, twice actually, first in the opening match against Triple H and then second in the main event against Orton and Batista, where he finally won the big one at WrestleMania. So that was just it was the culmination of a perfect story and one that wasn't necessarily written. It just kind of happened, you know?
Yeah, when the fans let you know what it is that they want, right? And I think when you have your finger on the pulse of that, you got to just let it be. I mean, one of the best examples was maybe Stone Cold. That was something that you couldn't stop.
Right.
You had to just let that bus come through and change to with the people, because before they were still trying to push their regular agenda, but Stone Cold was Stone Cold. You couldn't manufacture that.
Exactly. And can you imagine what would happen if they just said, now's not the time?
Yeah.
Like, that would have ruined everything.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, they just let it happen. So, and he'll always be one of my favorites, Daniel Bryan, just for all the work he's put in over the last, over a decade of doing this. Third is Undertaker Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25.
Many people say that's one of the best matches ever.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those matches that kind of transcends the sport, just because of how fascinating. Like, that had an amazing story to it as well. Like, it was, and I think all these matches are all, none of them are like pure technical wizardry, really. Like, there's not a lot of amazing like high spots or crazy stuff that's going on. It's just, these are all matches that were just perfect storytelling, you know. So definitely Taker Michaels. I would also, I think number two would maybe Hogan Rock from 18.
I was there for that. Were you there for that?
I was there for that.
Yeah, I was there. That, again, not a technical match, but
it was
quite a religious experience to be in that place.
Right? Yeah.
it was your childhood and your adulthood colliding, and not knowing. I don't know who you were rooting for, but I was a big Rock fan for WWE, yeah. But I was also a big NWO fan from WCW.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that was special.
I felt the same way. Yeah, it was. It's nothing quite like that since. That's. Yeah, it was wild. The last one would be Hart Austin WrestleMania 13, just because it was a great match, but also how important it was, and the story that they told in that, again, was just fantastic. Great storytelling.
Yeah, I was having a conversation. I don't know if you have ever met. He's been to Toronto a few times. He works for Valiant Comics. Matthew Klein is his name.
Right.
He's the director of sales for Valiant, but he's a huge wrestling mark.
Cool.
And I had him on the show to talk about, you know, the Bloodshot movies, some products that they were coming out with. But we went, you know, 20 minutes straight in a 35-minute conversation just talking wrestling, because he just got all excited awesome. For it. But we were talking about the Austin Michaels match. I mean, sorry, the Austin Hart match.
Right.
WrestleMania 13, and how it's crazy. 1997, that was how old it is, I guess, to say, but it still holds up as the benchmark for excellence.
Yeah, I agree in every way. It was it had amazing psychology, it had fantastic technical wrestling, the storytelling was great, the finish was like, you know, get out of here, it was perfect. It had everything. It's like, you can, if you had a checklist of perfect or like important bits in good wrestling matches, this would check everything off.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, Bret Hart was my favorite wrestler. I've said that many times. But when I don't know if I told you what I asked him when I met him at Toronto Comic Con.
No.
There's so many things I wanted to ask, but I said, what was that moment that you were most excited to slap on the sharpshooter? Which match was it?
That's a good question. And, what did he say?
He was signing the picture of him giving Shawn Michaels the sharpshooter in the Iron Man match.
Yeah.
And I was saying to myself, was it Shawn? Was it one of those matches? Like, did you cinch it on him during that era? And he said it was Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13. He couldn't wait.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he said I couldn't wait to do it, because he said the building was just the right building to, like, the way it echoed in Chicago.
Yeah.
the hockey arena there. He said everything was just electric, and he knew where they were, you know, just to do it at that during that match. He just said it was just going to be perfect. And
that's so cool. I love when they mention stuff like that about like the acoustics in the building and how big of a part that plays with them being able to hear the audience and to understand if what they're doing is working or not. It's a really neat thing that I never ever considered until I started hearing them talk about that.
Yeah. And I remember watching that match. A friend of mine had ordered it. He recorded it for me and my cousin to watch. And I hated seeing my favorite guy turn and get booed and be a crybaby and all of that stuff. But I was always so happy that he made Stone Cold pass out from the sharpshooter. Because at 13, I mean, and that was the magic with, you know, even the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, that era of matches, there were certain times when you took away the gimmicks of, you know, maybe a casket match or the Hulk Hogan charge up. Like those guys, the Iron Man match, you really believed it. It got to the point where that suspension of disbelief exists, and you really were like, they're really doing this. This is real.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that's a hard thing to do. Like to, you know, I find, especially as I get older, to suspend the disbelief.
Because of the high spots, I think that they look amazing. Like what they're able to do in the ring now is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
But there is something about, you know, seeing Benoit throw on that triple German suplex, and it really looks like it's hurting him as much as the guy he's giving it to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
As opposed to it being perfectly positioned in time, like a very well, it's almost like Harlem Globetrotter basketball in a way.
Yeah, it is. Yes, that's exactly what, I mean, that's what good wrestling is a show.
It's
a show that's, you can kind of forget that you're watching a show.
Yeah. That Jake the Snake Roberts sort of psychology is missing a little bit due to the speed of things.
Yeah, I agree. I am glad to see him again. Mm-hmm. Doing like AEW stuff. But yeah, you're totally right. It's there's I do quite enjoy those high-speed, high-velocity matches. Yeah,
I loved the luchadors back in the day.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. But I'm not sure if I would want to see The Rock do it.
No, of course. Definitely right. Not. It's a style.
Right. You
know? It's the same way I wouldn't want to see The Rock toss around a jobber for 20 seconds and have that be his match. It's like, save that for, you know, the big monsters like mm-hmm. Big Show and Braun Strowman, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. Save it for the guys who, like, are giants and need to get across that they're big and dangerous, you know. Don't have The Rock or Austin do stuff like that. And it's the same thing with all the flips. It's like, that's a style for the people who are super athletic and who want to showcase their strengths, and that should be okay. Not every match has to be like that. Some of them will be. Not every match has to end in 20 seconds. Some of them will. Like, it's all variety is what's going to, you know, variety is the key.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. That's a good list. I think it'd be hard. I mean, people would come up with other ones to match. You could have the ladder match, WrestleMania 10, or the WrestleMania 3. Was a good one between Macho Man and Steamboat, but your list is pretty sound. I like it.
Yeah, I tried to pick the stuff that I grew up with.
Right.
Just because I also have an affinity for that stuff as well. You know, it has a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in the case of Hogan Rock, seeing it live and not understanding how a place could be so loud. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it was incredible.
It was wild, yeah. Like, I'd never been around so much energy before in my life.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Like, and to see the energy shift.
Yes. Oh, man.
Like, who were you rooting for? Who did you want to see win?
Rock.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, yeah, me too.
Just because, you know, he was who I grew up with. Yeah, definitely The Rock. Yeah.
But to believe that Hogan could pull it off was also very, like, it did have you at the edge of your seat. I remember when Nitro first came to Toronto for the first time. It was that moment when Bret Hart had the steel plate and Goldberg speared him.
Yes, right. Yeah, that was awesome.
But I remember Hogan being here. He was, NWO had joined back together with the Wolfpack and the Black and White, that stupid storyline they did.
Yeah.
But the crowd, Hogan was supposed to be a heel, but Toronto was cheering him, and the show ended. I don't know if they showed it on air or what, but they weren't supposed to be cheering for him.
Right.
But it was that show where he just looked at the audience and started posing. old Hogan style posing, because they just insisted on him doing that.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. That's, we kind of always, especially in the city, in Toronto, had kind of a penchant for cheering the bad guys and booing the good guys.
Yeah, so, and it was funny that that big turn at WrestleMania 18, where he now went for the title. Like, he came as a member of the NWO, and suddenly that didn't work at all because Hogan was, the nostalgia factor was there, and then him coming back to Toronto, where just like when he was WCW, that pop, that yeah, love, that nostalgia love of him was super strong, and then he went back to the red and yellow. It was so,
yeah,
cool.
That's right. Yeah, it was, it's hard to, you know, to fathom if we'll ever see such neat stuff.
Yeah.
Like, again, you know?
Yeah.
Just with the lack of huge modern stars in the business.
It could come back around. I think it goes in cycles.
And it will. It's just going to take time. Like, the current generation of fans is going to have to spend a few more years, not a few more years, maybe even like a decade, like growing up with some of the people who are current mainstays in the business, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes less is more. I think if you give too much, it waters things down. But if you make things count a little bit more, you make a match count a little bit more, the stakes will be raised. Like, the profile will be raised.
And yeah, that's a great point.
I think sometimes with wrestling, if there's every month is a pay-per-view and every week a title changes, it doesn't make you feel as invested in these guys as you once did.
Yeah, not at all. It's hard. Like, I think, like, there's a lot of forums and message boards and subreddits and stuff where everyone has all of these ideas of booking decisions that they would make, and a lot of it is like, you know what, it sounds good on paper, but will it work in the long run? And I don't know. I for all the bad decisions that WWE has made, I still think that they make a lot of good decisions most of the time.
Yeah, they've always been hit and miss. If you go back and watch old pay-per-views from our glory days as kids, there's a lot of matches where you're like, why did we think this was a good idea? This was kind of stupid.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, they just did it. It didn't hit, and some of them did really, really well. So it's always going to be the case. And I think now, more being a smart mark, as they say, like understanding how wrestling works, you realize how important chemistry is between two guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And I don't think Stone Cold would have had that WrestleMania 13 moment if it wasn't with Bret Hart. Like, that was very specific to the two of them.
It was, yeah, big time.
So, and the same with The Rock and Hogan. Like, you need to have that right mixture of chemistry in the ring.
Yeah.
Because some guys are both great, but they're like oil and water.
Yeah.
So you never know. Booking on paper is easy to do until people get in the ring.
Exactly. It's so easy to do. But it's, you know, there's... and you know what? I'm glad that people do that anyways.
Like, that's part of the hobby, yeah.
That's part of the fun behind it. So, like... Absolutely. Like, have fun with it, and, you know, As long as we're all watching and we're all talking about it and having fun to some degree.
Yeah, 100%. So what are some five reads you could give the audience? Things that you've been enjoying or have enjoyed that you go back to when you need some downtime to enjoy a good story? What are five for you?
Well, the first thing I'm going to mention is Dragon Ball Super, which is the it's the current run of Dragon Ball, which is currently ongoing. It's okay. But the thing is, it's all published digitally first, which means it's still ongoing. It's like the latest chapter just came out on the 20th of last month, and we'll be getting another chapter the 20th of this month, and it's all available free online. If you're an anime or manga fan, or if you're especially a Dragon Ball fan, I would go read all of Super, because it's just so much fun. It's fantastic.
Okay.
Despite the pandemic and everything, it's still going to be released and fresh and new. So
that's good. That's a good tip.
It is good. Yeah, there will still be timely content. Another one would be Lock and Key, just because it's a really good book. I'm reading it right now over again, and it's I haven't seen the show on Netflix.
Okay, I was going to ask you that just now.
Yeah, haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't read it, and I wasn't. So they made a show about it. I'm pretty sure that's a book I've seen in the shops.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten around to watching it. I feel like I should read it before I watch it. But you recommend it?
I do recommend it. Okay. It's a ton of fun. It's just a really neat story. Yeah, I would give it a shot.
Who are the writers? Who wrote it?
Joe Hill.
Oh, okay, that's Stephen King's son, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He's a very talented writer. So I'd give that a shot for sure if you get the chance.
Okay. How many issues is it?
Pluto.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's a book called Pluto.
Uh huh.
Have you heard of it? It's a manga. It's,
no. No, I haven't.
Oh, man, it's very good. It's written and illustrated by Noaki Urasawa, and it was it's kind of like do you remember Astro Boy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a story in like the Astro Boy comics about like a detective solving these robot murders. It was a really neat idea. But not too long ago, I think it might have been mid-2000s, an artist / writer decided that he was going to take that story and ask permission to do like an adult version of it, like an updated, cold case serial murder story using these characters. And it's wild. It's very, very good.
Okay.
If you like science fiction, if you like artificial intelligence and androids, and if you like crime stories, this is cool.
And who publishes it?
That's a good. I think it's Viz Media.
Okay, so Pluto.
Pluto, yeah, Viz very Media. Very cool.
Okay,
I think it's in like between 8 and 10 volumes. I might be wrong about that, but it's great reads. The artwork is amazing. I've been finding myself kind of like studying that more and more as I read this book. So yeah, highly recommend Pluto. That was it for my list. Just looking at it. And that's it, because that's all the stuff that I've been reading lately, which is,
It's all good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you taking time out of your work day to chat, and I look forward to all the announcements that you've got coming out. I hope you'll come back onto the show and talk about it.
Oh, anytime. Yeah, I appreciate taking the time to you know, keep the entertainment content going during this time for everybody. We need podcasts, and we need to hear other people's voices more than ever. So it's good stuff that you're still doing. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. So again, be sure to pick up Sean's books, Source Point Press. Stay on the lookout for all of his stuff that's coming out. We're going to come back again with him being on the show. We'll have more wrestling talk. Maybe we'll do our favorite SummerSlam matches next time.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah.
All right. Well, you take care. Stay healthy, stay safe, and keep creating that great content.
Yeah, thanks, man. Very appreciated. And you stay healthy and safe as well.
All right, dude. Have a good one.
Yeah, take care.
Okay, bye.